You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation, and welcome to your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every game, news item, rumor, and more. Thank you for subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or on Himalaya. My name is David Ramil. Well, I hope no one ever questions my dedication to this podcast, because tonight's game against the 76ers was, and this is the understatement of the year, a difficult one to watch. On the second night of a back-to-back set, Miami traveled to Philadelphia to face Jimmy Butler's former team, and if there was any doubt as how the Sixers would react, that was put to rest within the first few minutes of the game. I had wondered if this game in late November had any kind of a playoff feel to it, but apparently that was something that was felt only one way, because the Sixers came out energized, focused, and dominant, while Miami was timid, apprehensive, and overwhelmed. Philadelphia jumped out to a huge lead early on. They poured it on early, they kept it going often, and they just clearly overmatched a Heat team that had no response whatsoever at any point during the game. The lead grew to 41 points at one time, and if not for some late shooting from Tyler Herro, this could have been Miami's biggest loss throughout the franchise's history, which is 31 points. Ultimately, Miami lost by 27, although it really felt like twice that. There isn't really much to say about the loss. It was so lopsided, but I'll start with Miami's general attitude. Butler started off looking to be the playmakers he's been all season. He was trying to dish the ball to some other players, try to get them going early on, and it didn't really work. Rookie Kendrick Nunn and Duncan Robinson looked every bit the inexperienced players they are, and you could immediately see that they were a little too amped up. The shots were hitting the back of the rim or missing completely, and they just had no response. At one point, Kendrick Nunn fouled Josh Richardson, former Heat player Josh Richardson, on a three-point attempt and led to a four-point play. They were just completely energized, too energized, in a point where they just had no control. They weren't really focused. I'm not sure exactly what happened from Nunn in particular. I'm surprised, because he's been so consistent as far as whether or not his shot is falling. He still goes out there and doesn't show much emotion one way or the other. The night before in Chicago against in front of his hometown fans and family and everything else like that, he didn't feel any pressure whatsoever. But here in Philadelphia, he just looked really, really, really anxious, and Duncan felt the same way. And it just, they clearly were not ready for the intensity of this kind of a matchup. So Eric Spoelstra inserted Goran Dragic early to inject some needed stability. But you have to give credit to Philly's defense. They really challenged everything that Miami tried to do. They were contesting every shot. Their closeouts were really excellent. At the same level as Miami's had been for most of the season, albeit against inferior opponents, Philly has a very, very good defense in general, and they just looked particularly sharp against Miami tonight. So they were clearly feeling the intensity, but they wanted to control the tempo, and they absolutely did throughout the whole game. The Heat shot just a woeful 40% from the field and 25% from three-point range. This is one of the best shooting teams in the league, and Philly completely obliterated them, just had no response. Not all of those shots were highly contested, too. Some of those were wide open, but they just weren't falling. And while turnovers have been a problem for Miami all season, they only committed 18 of them against Philadelphia. That wasn't it. But as shot after shot kept getting contested and the ones that were wide open wouldn't fall, the Heat began to hang their heads, and it became pretty apparent they had no response for this Philly team. They just felt out of the moment. It's something we haven't seen from this team. We've seen them put up a lot of fire. They've had big deficits before, namely against the Milwaukee Bucks, and they responded pretty well, and that was without Jimmy Butler. But against Philadelphia, I'm not sure what it was. I'm not sure what the difference was. But clearly, they just were not capable of mounting a charge here. They crumbled pretty easily. And so it was kind of a depressing look for this team, because they played so well of late, and they have won, again, against some inferior opponents, but they've won so handily on so many occasions, and it looked like they would have some kind of response, but they just never really did. Some numbers, even though it doesn't really tell the full story. Jimmy Butler, he really struggled against his former team. He played 30 minutes and scored 11 points on 4 of 13 shooting. He was booed loudly when he was announced and really every time he touched the ball. But by the second half and with the game really never in doubt, the crowd stopped caring. They stopped really booing all that loudly for Butler. And he just never really looked like the player that we've seen all season long. He's never really looked like a player that's shied away from a big moment either. But against Philadelphia, he was pretty clearly shook. And I don't know what happened as far as his composure, but he just did not seem like he was ready for this kind of challenge. Maybe he wasn't expecting. Whatever we saw on the court from Philadelphia was not something that Jimmy was prepared to handle. And I don't think it was the crowd booing necessarily. I don't think it was any of those external factors. Although, I know he poured his heart and soul into that Philadelphia team and he tried his best in that 1 year he was there, not even a full season. But at the same time, he was really, really shook by the whole moment. And the 4 of 13 shooting, something we've seen from him earlier in other games as well, where he struggled offensively, but he's been able to contribute in any other ways. And maybe that's not up to him either. You know, if he's dishing the ball on a night when he's shooting below 50% and he can get 5 to 10 assists, that depends on guys like Duncan Robinson and Kendrick Nunn and Bam Adebayo to finish those shots and to knock those down. And they weren't doing so tonight. So a pretty bad game for him. And he struggled in almost every aspect. Even his superior defense was exposed on multiple occasions. And he finished with a team-worst minus 31 plus-minus rating during his time on the floor. Kendrick Nunn finished with 6 points. Duncan Robinson finished with 4 points. And Myers Leonard, 0 points. They combined to shoot 3 of 18. And the starting lineup looked really out of sorts. We've wondered before about the overall talent level of this team, especially in the starting lineup, whether or not it makes sense for Eric Spoelstra to continue to roll out such a young, unproven lineup with Nunn and Robinson, to count on Adebayo to be a productive player, to have Myers Leonard, whose offense can be so inconsistent at times, and they were absolutely exposed against Philadelphia, who has a much higher talent level across the board. I'm not sure that they're as deep as Miami, but as far as their top-end talent, with Joel Embiid, with Ben Simmons, even Tobias Harris, and on a night when Josh Richardson played as well as he did, something I'll get into later on, Philadelphia looks really dangerous. I didn't even mention Al Horford, who is, in his own way, a older version of Bam Adebayo, a less athletic version perhaps, but a guy who can do so much defensively, who can rebound so well, who can make plays for others, and can absolutely space the floor. He wasn't as much of a factor as you'd expect, but he's still such a talented player, and Philadelphia just clearly overmatched Miami's starting lineup. Dragic had 18 points. Most of those came from the free throw line as he shot 9 of 11 from the stripe. He and Tyler Hero, of all the players on Miami's roster, looked the least fazed by Miami's huge front line, although Goran couldn't really score in the paint because Joel Embiid is such a huge obstacle there. He had a couple of shots swatted there. He tried his typical move of curling around the baseline or trying to get past an initial defender using a quick first step, and then he tried laying it up against Embiid's massive body, and he would get those shots swatted. If he did that typical move where he drives into the paint and then kind of stops and turns on a dime and puts up a quick hook, those shots weren't falling either. And so, he tried his best. And again, he was able to draw some fouls. Give him credit for putting up a strong effort. Second highest scorer on Miami's roster, but still not a great night for Goran, despite his overall effort. And Tyler Hero added 20 points to lead all Heat scorers. He actually went 7 of 17 from the floor. I will say that, as I mentioned before, he did seem least fazed by the Philadelphia 76ers. That might be expected given his high level of confidence, but he didn't back down. Even when he came into the game and Philadelphia already had a pretty unsurmountable lead, he struggled with a shot early on and then just kept going. Looked to keep doing the things that he does. He didn't waver in his shot selection. He didn't waver in driving to the rim. He used his length well. He was able to get to the line a couple times, and he was as aggressive as you could expect. So 20 points, maybe some of those numbers are a little inaccurate because they came at a point in time during the fourth quarter when it was just clearly a blowout and Miami had no response. But still, overall, a solid effort for him. He did finish 4 of 9 from three-point range. He kept shooting. He kept doing what he does, and you have to give him credit for that because nobody else in Miami's roster seemed capable or competent. Bam Adebayo, a quiet night for him, unfortunately. 12 points, 5 of 9 shooting, 5 rebounds, no assists, which is very unusual for Bam Adebayo, 1 steal, no blocks. Some solid overall defense on Embiid. He started off on Horford and then kind of switched onto Embiid as Myers-Leonard got into some early foul trouble. He was mostly ineffective, Leonard was, and Adebayo tried his best, but he's clearly... Embiid is a difficult challenge for any player, and for a player like Bam, who is so much undersized than Embiid, it was very difficult for him to match up, but he uses his speed and his athleticism and his positioning as well as anybody. So he's smaller than Horford, and Horford has typically done a very good job of guarding Embiid. If you remember those Boston Celtics matchups against the 76ers in recent years, Horford was the best option to try and limit Embiid, and he does so pretty well. So for Adebayo, probably something he needs to continue working on, because if this team meets the 76ers down the road in the playoffs, if the playoffs are an option for either team, then it's something they should consider as to who's going to guard Embiid, because I'm not sure anybody on this roster currently is capable of doing a much better job than Adebayo did, and even he was overwhelmed at times. On the flip side, Philadelphia looked very good. I'll have to be honest with you. I know that's hard to say after a game like this. You don't want to hear anything complimentary of this team, but they do look solid. I also mentioned something during Twitter that I'm not sure that tonight's performance was really indicative of a huge difference in skill level. I don't know that Philadelphia's roster, as talented as they are in their starting lineup, I'm not sure that they're so much better at executing than Miami is. The version of Miami that we've seen this season is capable of handling and holding their own against Philadelphia. But the energy level really created this huge disparity there where Miami just... This is a team that we haven't seen before, where they hung their heads, where they just didn't look to respond, where they just seemed so overwhelmed and unwilling to meet the challenge. And that's pretty unusual for an Eric Spoelstra-led team, for a team with the personalities that we've seen over the course of the season. And that was a little hard to see, to be honest with you, because it was unusual and they just looked so dejected so early on and unwilling to respond, as I mentioned before. And so it was a weird thing to see. I think Miami can beat this team, and not just during the regular season. I think they could probably even hold their own in a playoff series if they're playing as well as possible. But that's something I'll get into when I answer some questions in the next couple of segments. But I'll also add that Josh Richardson led all scorers with 32 points. He showed a swagger and confidence that he rarely, if ever, displayed in Miami. I took some crap on Twitter for some comments about Josh, but you know what? It's my show, and I'll reiterate again that I'll keep rooting for Josh because he never did anything wrong while he was on this team other than to fail to become a superstar just like 90% of the rest of the guys in the league. He was a good locker room guy. He was a great interview. A really solid player, and he seemed happy in his new role in Philadelphia, which is probably the best one for him. And again, he was aggressive. He was confident. He finished with 32 points. He hit some three-pointers there where he was contested or showing some new versatility on his offense that he never had in Miami. So he seems like he maybe has taken a leap. I know he hasn't been able to do so consistently. He's a fourth option on the 76ers roster as far as their starting lineup is concerned. And that doesn't really matter because against Miami, despite what the Philadelphia broadcast team was saying, that he wasn't really concerned about making this another game or any kind of special game, that it was just another night against another opponent. He was clearly looking to make a point, and he did feel good about the overall performance, and he probably should have because he was pretty dominant. Coming up next, there's more to talk about this game and whether or not it showed if Miami is a true contender or if changes might be needed to this roster. I'll get into that and more in the next couple of segments. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Audible has the world's largest selection of audiobooks and audio entertainment. Start listening with a 30-day Audible trial. Choose one audiobook and 2 Audible originals absolutely free. Visit audible.com/lockedonNBA. If you're listening on the go and you can't visit Audible right now, you can find this and all the other offers from Locked On sponsors at lockedonpodcast.com/offers. I'll discuss if Justice Winslow might have had a difference tonight later on in the show, but let's start off with some other questions that you all submitted using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Stephen Wang writes in, How much overreaction will there be from tonight's game? I'd say a pretty fair amount. There seems to be a tendency, maybe online in general, and particularly from NBA fans across the league, that we're all looking for weaknesses. We're all looking for paper tigers. Teams that might not be as good as they appear. And Miami's 11-3 record going into tonight's matchup, you could certainly poke holes at it. I mean, they've lost to a good Minnesota team. They lost to the Denver Nuggets, which is a very strong contender in the West. They lost to the Lakers. And they also, you know, just got shellacked by the Philadelphia 76ers, who many people think, as do I, that they're probably the Eastern Conference's best team. So you look at Miami and whether or not they're able to hang with these, you know, contending teams, and you're probably going to find some weaknesses in those 11 wins, whether or not they were able to really beat up on anybody other than bad opponents. As we've said before, you know, many people on Twitter have noted, I've said it before on this podcast, it's good for Miami to rack up those wins against bad teams. They're not supposed to lose to bad teams, as this team has done in the previous couple of seasons. Those teams were supposed to beat up on the Orlandos and the Atlantas and the Sacramentos of the world, and they could never really find a way to do so. So it's not surprising that they lose against good teams. I just would have expected a better effort overall. As far as other overreactions are concerned, well, you know, I think a lot of people will look at whether or not this team has enough talent, whether or not anybody other than Jimmy Butler can step up in these kinds of situations, whether or not they have a clear go-to scorer. We think of Butler as being that type of person, but he hasn't really done that over the course of the season. We think of him as a guy who can take over games when it's necessary, and I think he's shown that on occasion, but he's also been a little passive trying to get other guys engaged. And I'm not sure on a night like tonight, if Kendrick Nunn is capable of handling that role, if Duncan Robinson is capable of handling that role. I don't think Duncan is supposed to be that. I think Kendrick views himself that way. I think he's talked about this before, where he said that he can be counted on to be a complimentary scorer to Jimmy, another 20 points per game score on a nightly basis. That wasn't the case against Philadelphia. And so you wonder whether or not this team has enough top-end talent, enough scoring in particular, where they can match up with any contending team. And I'm not so sure that they do. So will there be overreactions? Absolutely. Will they all be warranted? Probably not. I think Miami's still a good team. I think, again, the energy level really just knocked them for a loop. I think if some of those early shots had fallen, and if Nunn had just felt a little bit more confident about his shot, if Duncan had seen a three or two go in, maybe they would have been a little bit more aggressive, and they would have been a little bit more willing to compete, more capable of saying, you know what, we're not totally out of this. But instead, you couple those shots not falling, the fact that their energy was so low and that Philadelphia's was so high. And that Philadelphia is a good team. I'll say it. They are a good team, particularly on defense. They can make things difficult. They were really, really engaged and sharp against Miami. They've struggled against bad teams too, but against Miami, they just seem to reach another level. So it shows me that they were focused on this game and trying to prove a point because they feel jilted by Jimmy Butler's departure. I think that's a little unwarranted, but regardless, here they are, they were pissed off, and they wanted to prove something, and they certainly did. They beat up on Miami, and they feel pretty good about themselves. So I think you also take into consideration a lot of the Twitter battles we've seen between Heat fans and Heat Twitter and Philadelphia Sixers Twitter. A little ridiculous. I think all the talk about Jimmy leaving to a losing team and all that is absolute crap. He's happy here. He wants to be the player that he is here. Could he have won more in Philadelphia? Absolutely. But I think he's capable of leading this team to good things, if not great things, down the road. And I think a lot of that talk has been really, really overstated. But Philadelphia Sixers fans will be incensed after this. They'll be pretty confident. They'll be riding a pretty big high. And we're going to see a lot of crap from them, to be honest with you. And I think that's pretty fair after tonight. I think it's a lot very overstated. I think they should probably just accept a win a little bit more humbly, but that's not the way Twitter works, nor is it the way that fans in general work. So I know cocky Heat fan would absolutely be showing out if they had blown out Philadelphia the way the Heat were blown out tonight. So as far as other overreactions are concerned, maybe national pundits we'll start to look at this team and say, oh, clearly they're not as good as we had thought. I saw a lot of hype building up over Miami because not only did they have a really good record, but they're playing such a fun style. If you had watched the NBA TV broadcast before the game, Caron Butler and Stan Van Gundy were talking about this Heat team being really fun because they share the ball so well. They play defense at such a high level. They force a lot of turnovers. They do all the little things that makes basketball fun to watch. A lot of the things that we've seen from the Golden State Warriors over the same recent span, 5 years or so. The difference being that, of course, they have top-end talent like Kevin Durant and Steph Curry and others. Miami really has Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo to a lesser degree, and that's about it. And we're still not sure what to expect from guys like Nunn and Robinson on a nightly basis. And we've seen inconsistency from them throughout the season, even though it's still early on in the season. And against Philadelphia, they were clearly out of sorts. And so that's going to open up some questions and ones that maybe this Heat front office needs to ask. Jeff Nicholas writes, you got to wonder when, if ever, James Johnson gets worked in. Seems like a night when spacing and slash youth is struggling. It would be an ideal time to go with JJ at center. I can't disagree there. I don't know what the situation is. The Heat has been very quiet about James. Obviously, they played him the other night when it was already a win for Miami. His minutes have been inconsistent even when he's come back. If I had to venture a guess, I'd say that they're trying to prove a point. I think we've seen from Eric Spoelstra, if not necessarily pettiness, I know that he tries to absolutely drive home a point. He wants guys to contribute and be dedicated. And the fact that JJ came into camp maybe a little out of shape, I think they're really trying to prove to him that he's cost himself an opportunity. I know you could probably look at the fact that, as others have suggested, that maybe he won't earn a playing bonus and things of that sort. That's possible. I won't speculate on that. But I do think they are absolutely trying to prove a point to James Johnson. And I think, to Jeff's point, he should have played out there. I think he would have provided a little bit more than what we saw from Robinson and Nunn. If nothing else, you could have inserted him to that lineup and taking Myers Leonard out and seeing what you get out of JJ. His playmaking ability was a factor when they met the 76ers in the playoffs a couple of years ago. He's a big body. He can at least challenge Embiid. I mean, why not throw him out there? The only player who was able to hinder Embiid at all was Adebayo. But if you've got Adebayo on Embiid, you could put James Johnson on Al Horford and make him work for his points. Horford finished with 16 points on 7 of 19 shooting, including 2 of 2 of 3 points. He was a good role player. And so with James on him, I think he probably would not have gotten those points as easily. So you can go out there, you can have James bring the ball up court. He's seen these situations before. He can handle a Tobias Harris. He can handle an Al Horford. He can even switch on to Ben Simmons if necessary. It's just another big body, another versatile defender, and another playmaker. I know you want to take a chance with Nunn and Hero and Robinson and see if they'll be able to space the floor, but they all weren't capable of doing so tonight. So why not have James out there with his body, his talent, his ball handling ability, and have him see if he can get to the rim and maybe make plays for others and see if maybe that creates a change. I think Spoelstra can be a little rigid in his rotation and his efforts to try and prove a point. And it cost him tonight because maybe it would have been a little bit different. Maybe it wouldn't have been much of a factor. Who knows? We don't know because the reality is he just never played him. And so we'll never know if that was an opportunity wasted or not. But I think he should have at least experimented because, hell, you're getting blown out by 41 points. What the fuck do you have to lose? Just throw James Johnson out there. HeatLifer36 asks, was this one of those nights where everything went wrong, or are the Sixers that much better than us? Or maybe some combination of both? I don't even know what to think about that. Well, as I mentioned before, I think it's probably, as most things in life are, a combination of both. I think everything did go wrong, and I think the Sixers are better than us as far as their overall talent is concerned, but I think still that Miami can play their version of basketball a little bit more effective if their energy is different. If they had not seen this huge lead build up in the first quarter. And look, we've seen it on the flip side. Miami has beat bad teams and built these really big leads, and that's just knocked them for a loop. When Cleveland and New Orleans and other teams just get beat up like that, it takes them a while to go, you know what? we can try to mount a comeback. And yeah, they do. I mean, you look at the Chicago team, they were getting blown out early and often, and then they managed to close the gap to 7 points at one point. You know, Philadelphia is a much better team than the Chicago Bulls. They have a lot more talent. And so from Miami's perspective, they were getting blown out, and they maybe tried to make a comeback, and they just didn't have an answer for Philadelphia's strong defense. And so, you know, it's something this coaching staff and front office and the players have to look at. I'm not sure if this is going to force a trade. I'm not sure if this is the kind of game that opens up Pat Riley's eyes and says, you know what, we're not done yet. We have to do something to shake up this roster. Maybe it's a matter of getting Justice Winslow back in the lineup, something I'll answer in the next segment. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Use your basketball knowledge to prove you have what it takes at mybookie.ag, where they make it easy to play and even easier to get paid. Use promo code LOCKEDONNBA and MyBookie will match 50% of your first deposit. If you're listening on the go and you can't visit MyBookie right now, find this and all other offers from Locked On sponsors at lockedonpodcast.com/offers. Listen to and subscribe to new and archived episodes of Locked On Heat on Himalaya, as well as on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're in iTunes, please leave a rating and review, especially if it's a good one. No stat, player, or scapegoat of the game tonight, because let's be honest, everyone's play was so atypically bad, it doesn't really make much sense. I don't know that any player stood out one way or the other. Everybody played badly, everybody played as well as they possibly could, and there's not much to really go on. I guess Tyler Hero had the best game, but even that seems kind of pointless considering some of those points came late in the game, and it doesn't really matter, to be honest with you. So I'll answer more questions like this one from Alton Otto, who asks, I know you don't think there's a place for Justice Winslow on this team because he's unable to score without the ball, but we sure did miss his size and strength in the perimeter and his playmaking ability. I had a lot of questions about Justice aside from Alton's, but his is as good as any as a launching point. I had somebody ask specifically about his return, and I'll tell you, the Heat has been absolutely quiet on when Justice comes back. I think they're being very, very overly cautious about the concussion. I'm not sure if they want to disrupt things right now because the Heat is playing at such a high level. Maybe they just don't want to force him back. He was playing a high number of minutes before he went down with the injury, and so the expectation is that he'll come in and regain that role. But with guys like Nunn and Robinson and everybody else kind of stepping up and having their own moments to shine, maybe they don't want to disrupt that, and that's why they've been a little reluctant to play Winslow. I had theorized before the two-game road trip that he probably wasn't going to play in either of those games, and he did not. They held him out. He didn't travel with the team, although he's been spotted around the team, and I saw him just last week on Saturday against the New Orleans Pelicans. He was behind there back in the locker room following the win. He looked fine. So I don't know. I haven't gotten any access to team doctors or reports, and the Heat hasn't been giving any out. So I'm not sure when he's coming back. I'd imagine it's probably going to be Monday against Charlotte, because at this point, like I said with James, what do you have to lose? Throw Justice out there and see what happens. Against Philadelphia, what could he have done differently? Well, at the very least, he would have been a big defensive body. He would have been able to contest guys like Tobias and Horford to some degree. He would have been able to switch on to Simmons, much like James Johnson. And he, too, has the ability to get to the rim. I think he's a little bit bigger than a Nunn or a Robinson, a little bit more aggressive in getting to the rim. And so he probably could have drawn some fouls on guys like Simmons and Embiid in particular. And he would have been able to make plays for others because he has proven to be a capable passer and an occasional bucket getter. You know, one of the things with Kendrick Nunn is that he's so aggressive in looking for his shot that he doesn't always share the ball as much as he could. That's not to say that he's not a capable playmaker, but he's just trying to get his shot. He takes bad shots on occasions. He's been hitting those, but he also looks to get his shot going more than anything else. And so I think with a guy like Justice, who is more of a high usage playmaker rather than an offensive bucket getter, he'd probably try to make plays for others. And then maybe we could see what it would be like for Justice to have the ball in his hands and then have Jimmy be the off-ball scorer. You know, I have to question whether maybe I've been wrong about what Justice's role has been. I wasn't sure when Miami was playing at a high level whether or not Justice could fit into this lineup, whether or not he adds any kind of dimension to this team. But the reality is that against top-end talented teams like Philadelphia, maybe he makes a difference on the defensive end. Maybe he's able to control the pace a little bit better. Maybe he's able to do what he does as a playmaker, and then we can see Jimmy Butler the scorer rather than the playmaker that we've seen for the first 10 games of the season or so. So I think he absolutely would have been a factor. I think it would have been good to see him out there, and he's lived up to this high-energy matchup before. He's faced the 76ers in the playoffs. He was probably Miami's best player, most aggressive player against the 76ers back in the playoffs a couple seasons ago. And so I think that that would have been something to really shift the energy in Miami's favor, to be honest with you. So he absolutely could have been a contributor there, and it's unfortunate we didn't get a chance to see him play, but hopefully he'll be back on the court soon. Greg writes, "This is the worst matchup for us in the entire NBA. Embiid is like Shaq against us. He's just too big. This Heat team is way better than previous versions, an Eastern Conference Finals contender probably, but we still have the same issues as before. No elite talents on the level of top three NBA draft picks." Well, there's a lot to say there. Is it the worst matchup for us? That's we haven't seen what the other 20-some teams in the league look like against Miami. We've faced Cleveland twice. We faced an Atlanta Hawks team without, John Collins and with Trae Young going down with injury. We haven't seen a lot of what the rest of the league has to offer. But so I'm not sure if it's the worst matchup or not. And that's a lot to pin on either team, to be honest with you. But I will get into the whole point of whether or not Miami has elite athletes at a level of a top three NBA draft picks. And I got to say, I'm not so sure I buy into that. I think there isn't that much of a disparity anymore with the one and done system being what it is. I don't know that you're going to see a top 10 player be dramatically better than a guy taken late in the second round. There's an opportunity there. I think a lot of it has to do with a good system, a good team at the collegiate level that puts a player in a position to succeed. If they're on national television, if they have big moments, if that team is deep, like at Kentucky or other powerhouse colleges like UNC and Duke, then they'll probably go deeper in the NCAA tournament and have those opportunities to come up big in big moments. And that pushes your stock up considerably. Are they a great player? Look, I mean, Justice Winslow was the second best player in a national contending team in Duke. And I don't know that he's an elite level athlete, and he was still projected by many to be a top five pick in the draft. So I'm not so sure that makes that much of a difference anymore. I think you get Karl-Anthony Towns, who was the first pick in the draft. He's not an elite level athlete. He's a hell of a player, one of the best in the NBA, but I don't know that he's an elite athlete by any stretch. I think Adebayo, picked 14th, is a much better athlete than Karl-Anthony Towns, and I think we're starting to see why that athleticism makes him such a difference maker. So to be honest with you, I'm not sure. I know this is a common gripe. I know the reality is for a lot of Heat fans is that they probably felt like this team should have tanked over the last couple seasons because they weren't really getting deep into the playoffs. And last season, they didn't make the playoffs at all. But I'm not sure if tanking and the losing mentality that creates is one that you want to... It feels too much like flirting with disaster to me. And I'm not a fan of tanking or losing on purpose or anything like that. I think you see too many teams around this league, like Sacramento, like Orlando, like Cleveland and others, that if not for the right situation, they'll lose and they'll keep losing. Look at Minnesota. They have top 10 talent. They have top 5 talent. They have Andrew Wiggins. They have Karl-Anthony Towns. And they're still losing a lot of basketball games. So I don't know that it makes as much of a difference, Greg, so I have to disagree with you on that. Josh Van Meter asks, "What do you think the game plan was going into this game, and how was it not able to be altered to overcome the deficits?" Well, Josh, I have no answer on that. I think if I had to speculate, Eric Spoelstra being Eric Spoelstra, he was going to keep to what he thinks this team does best, which is the same version of this team that we've seen on multiple occasions. He's likely to switch a matchup here and there. Like I said before, he had Bam Adebayo on Al Horford and tried his best with Myers Leonard to limit Joel Embiid to some degree, but I don't think that had anything to do with it. I think the game plan was to try and move the ball, to try and have Jimmy do what he does best, and it just didn't pay off. So I'm not sure if he could have done anything differently, other than, again, go deeper into the bench and maybe include James Johnson and see what happens. Maybe he could have gone with a smaller lineup early on, forced them to adjust to Miami's smaller lineup, but he didn't. He went with Myers Leonard to start the game. He went with him to start the third quarter, and it backfired. So a lot of things did go wrong for Miami against the Sixers. They had no energy. Josh Richardson blew up for 32 points. Everybody on the Sixers' starting lineup played very well. And conversely, they didn't have many players in Miami side of things that played well. And so that's a recipe for disaster. You're never going to be able to overcome that against any team. And so I'm not sure if a game plan by Spoelstra could have really altered much of anything. So I think this is just a bad night, and one that hopefully we'll forget, because the Heat are back on the floor on Monday to face the Charlotte Hornets. I'll try to post a mailbag episode before then, but check back here Monday night for my recap after that game. That's it for today. You can connect with me on Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat or email me at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. I'm David Rommel signing off and thanking you, as always, for your support.
Yeah! Wrap it up, B.